Hey, they're not in a service right now, but our new high school pastor that's coming in January, Joe Lee, also known as Mojo. I understand that it's a nickname that was given to him in third grade, so he must have been throwing down some awesome sauce in third grade. He got this nickname, Mojo, and he's over with our high school group right now, and we're just so thrilled to have him. If you're interested in meeting him or like running your theological grid by him, making sure he's all squared away, I'm sure he'll just love questions like that. And so he's over there in the high school group, and many of you already know that our current high school pastor, Jed, he's moving into an executive pastor role. He's going to be helping us develop staff and overseeing our ministry and advancement in ministry. So I'm really excited. It's a great move for our church. It's a great thing for Jed, and it's a great thing for me to get that kind of help. So thank you guys for being so supportive through that. And so check him out. He'll be here, I think, in our Christmas Eve service too. You get to meet him then too. So hey, we're in a series right now called Relationship Goals. And on your seat, if you're just joining us, there's a yes, no card. And we start every service by asking a few questions, relationship questions. And we're asking you to tell us how to do relationships. So you either hold up yes or no. You guys understand that. Pretty self-explanatory. Don't need an in-service on that, okay? You ready for your questions? All right. Just checking. Okay. If you're at work, should you always answer the phone when your husband or wife calls? Yes or no? Okay. All right. Sure you want to put no there? Just saying. Okay, yes or no? You must have stuffing with Thanksgiving dinner. Yes or no? Must have stuffing. Wow, there's a few stuffing haters out there, but mostly you guys are for it. Okay, speaking of Thanksgiving, yes or no? Is it okay to not invite some of your family members to Thanksgiving Day? Yes or no? Okay, hopefully the no's, your family isn't in church today. And they're still wondering, what are we doing on Thanksgiving? So speaking of family, should in-laws visit more than 2 times a year? Yes or no? Yes or no? Be very careful with this answer, I forgot to tell you. Okay, yes. Yes, of course they should, except for a few of you. How about this one? Is pride a major factor in any of your conflicts? Yes or no? Yeah, the confession is good for the soul. Some of you might need counseling. So, and then last but not least, probably the most important question I could ask you in regard to relationships, will the University of Miami win the national championship this year? Yes or no? You don't care. Okay. Oh, man. I grew up in Miami. I think they're back, but I don't know. I don't know. Hey, we are talking about relationships in this series, and every question I just asked has the potential to create conflict. I don't know if you noticed that or not. Maybe some of you are going to go home angry at each other, you know, just by your questions, you know. So, you know, here's the thing. Like, conflict is just part of the human experience. And, you know, for most of us, like, I would say there's none of us that love conflict. Most of us would say we dislike it. And some of us would say we run away from it like the dinosaur in Toy Story. You know, I just can't stand confrontation. But it is part of the human experience. In that sense, you could say it's normal. Conflict is normal. Just start reading your Bible from the front. Start in Genesis and start reading through and see how long it takes before the first major conflict arises. I'm just saying. It's just part of what we deal with. If you're a married couple, statistically, 312 times a year, you will have an inconsequential, nagging conflict. 312 times a year, which means that we're fussing almost every day, right? Some of you are bringing that average up. You're pulling it up. And for those of us that are under 300, we're really grateful because you make us look good. So conflict is uncomfortable. but it's necessary. It can even be good. Conflict can be good. And I think that by the time we get finished today, you'll see how that doing conflict well is really important, because God uses conflict to shape us. And so today, you know, as we continue relationship goals, I want to talk today about how to fight fair. Because that's important. Many of us are familiar with doing conflict poorly. None of us really love it. But if we have to go through it, and it's going to shape us and do something helpful for all of us, then we should do it well. In fact, I would say that you cannot have meaningful, lasting, and fulfilling relationships unless you know or learn how to fight fair. So today, what I'd like to do is take this fight theme. I almost called this message Fight Club, but and you know the first rule of Fight Club, right? Never mind. So, but we're going to look at it through the lens of fighting. Okay, so I know that's kind of like not a good word to use, but most of you are familiar with that action. So we're going to talk about how to fight fair. I have five things to share with you that I think the Bible helps us, guides us in order to do conflict better. Okay, so first of all, we fight fair by dropping the winner-loser categories. You know that in conflicts, like we think that way. We think, I have to win it. And you know what causes that? What is the root of that win-lose? Is pride. Pride gives you this posture in a conflict that says you have to win. So if there's a winner, what else do we have? We have losers. And we want to eliminate that category in order to have better conflict. In Proverbs 13:10, the writer says that pride only breeds quarrels. Now think about that. That proverb is saying that either every quarrel you've ever been in has as its root cause pride, or the only thing that pride can produce is quarreling. I don't know how exactly to parse that, but I think what I do know is that almost every conflict has pride in there somewhere. And if it does, the result is found in Proverbs 16:18, where it says, pride goes before destruction, and a haughty spirit before a fall. If pride is part of that conflict, then what's going to happen as a result? That conflict is going to end in destruction, in a stumbling. And yet, conflict can be so helpful if we eliminate pride from it. Pride can cause unnecessary conflict, but it can also cause a worthwhile conflict to go badly. How do you identify pride in a conflict? For that, I read a book in preparing for this series by Les Parrott. He and his wife, Leslie Parrott, are prolific couples writers, and he wrote a book, The Good Fight. Now, you've heard of having the good fight, right? And in this book, they have four questions that they identify as helpful in determining how much pride is in your conflict. In fact, there's even an app. If you buy this book, which, you know, if you're a couple or if you'd like to do conflict better in any way, you should get this book. It's really good, really practical. And they if you purchase the book, you get a few apps, applications, for those of you that are over 40. These are things on the phone that help you do things. And so there's a Pride-O-Meter app. And you can rate yourself on these four questions in the app, and it will spit out a percentage of how much pride is in your conflict. Here's the questions. First of all, am I closed-minded in the conflict? See, pride says that I have all the answers already, so I don't need any more information, so I'm going to be closed-minded. Secondly, do I feel superior in the conflict? Well, of course I do, if I already think I have all the answers, right? Do I feel superior? Thirdly, do I feel defensive are unwilling to admit my fault, which if I know all the answers and I don't need any more information, then of course I'm going to be defensive of you trying to put something else in my head, right? And then the last question is, do I feel like winning the argument is the most important thing right now? And it will give you the percentage. Now, I must tell you, it's very difficult to get that app out in the middle of a conflict and answer those questions accurately. But if you do, it'll tell you a little something. How many of you, use your yes or no card, you would say that in the conflicts you experienced just in the last week or so, you can sit, honestly say, you know, pride was in there somewhere. Raise it up, yes or no? Yeah, it's everywhere. So eliminate the winner-loser category. Secondly, trade gloves to see the issue from their perspective. You know, if we're in a boxing match, obviously I have all my equipment that's designed just for me, but as a visual, what would it be like if we traded gloves and I put the other person's gloves on and I started to look at the battle from their vantage point? Have you ever said anything like this in the middle of a conflict? I don't understand him. I have no idea what would make her happy. I don't know why this is such a big deal to you. You know, those people over there, they're going liberal. Or they're just part of the alt-right. Or have you ever attributed somebody who they hold a different perspective than you, have you ever referred to them as Hitler? That's one sure way to know that you're not really seeing it from their perspective. You know that research shows that the majority of conflicts that we have could be easily resolved if we would just do this one thing. See it from their perspective. I'm going to put an image up on the screen right now, and you tell me, what do you see? Do you see a rabbit or a duck? How many of you see a rabbit? Raise your hand. How many of you see a duck? How many of you just woke up because people are moving around you right now? Okay. Okay, so rabbit or the duck, if you see anything else in there, you need counseling. But who's right? That's the point. Paul wrote in his letter to the Romans in chapter 12, verse 10, that we're to be devoted to one another in brotherly love. And in so doing, we honor one another above ourselves. See, Paul says that the first thing we have to do in a relationship is to devote ourselves to one another in love. And when we do that, we have the ability then to honor them. In fact, there's nothing more honoring to someone than to try to see whatever conflict you're in from their perspective. 90% of fights in a marriage could be resolved this way, according to marriage and family counselors. So I know some of us don't know what to do with when we have a different perspective. So I'm going to give you get different perspective 101. And in your notes, there's a question or a statement that you can make when you're stuck. So before you start to defend or before you start to attack or before you start to assume all these things about where someone's coming from, say this. Tell me more about that. Tell me more. Tell me more about why you're so upset about that. Tell me more about why you believe that particular thing. Tell me why that thing matters so much to you. This will help you get in a place where you can learn a little bit more about where they're coming from before we judge or conclude. You know, one of the things that I've noticed about myself during, you know, everything that's going on in our world, and, you know, the news feed is just constantly channeling things through. And what I've noticed is that I have a tendency to reject or accept the information based on what my personal bias is on it already. It's like, of course it's this. Well, of course it's that. And I don't really know. So much more information before we judge. So trade gloves to see it from their perspective. Fight fair rule number three, stop punching with your words. Stop punching with your words. You've heard of fight or flight. You know, when we face conflict, some of us are runners. We're just like, I just soon get out of here. I don't have to deal with that. And then some of us are fighters. And in fact, that's when it happens, it's like that's our first emotion is anger. And, you know, we start punching with our words. It's like, and as soon as that conflict comes up, that there's some little thing in there that we pick up on, we're like, all right, let's do it. Game on. You want to fight? Let's fight. And the other person is going, well, I was just wondering if you were going to eat all your tots. You know? Anger can be really helpful in an emotion, but not in relationships. It works against us. In Proverbs 12:18, it says, reckless words pierce like a sword, but the tongue of the wise brings healing. When you look at that verse, which would you prefer to describe you? One with reckless words that will pierce and cut like a sword? Or would you rather be the person who brings healing to a situation? That power is in our words. You guys, you've heard the word snarky, snark. You know where that comes from? It's two words put together. Snide, which you know what a snide remark is. And then remark. So it's to give a dismissive remark. That's what it means to be snarky. And statistically, 96% of the ways conflicts start, that's how it's going to end. So if we start with snarky comments, it's likely to end in a bad place. When we say things like, you always dump your projects on me. You never pick up your stuff. And you never pick up the tab. Do you ever think of anyone other than yourself? And you never answer your phone when I call. And it can just go on and on. It's like just put always and never in there and you're almost guaranteed to create a snarky remark. And that starts the discussion about the thing that you need to talk about, right? Because somewhere underneath there's an issue. And if we start that way, it's likely to end that way. And again, relationships for dummies here. This is for me. This is very helpful for me. And it comes out of the good fight. Les Parrott says, use the XYZ formula. XYZ. When in situation X, when you do Y, I feel Z. In situation X, when you do Y, I feel Z. When we start with a snarky comment to generate a discussion about an issue, it's loaded with assumption. It's loaded with a judgment and accusation. And, you know, many times, ignorance. We don't really know. And it's like we've just layered it and just filled it up with all these things that don't need to be in there. But if we could have a better conversation if we said, you know, in situation X, when you do Y, I feel Z. Let me give you a couple examples that are where I live. Okay, so like I kind of have this feeling, I don't know, maybe you don't agree, but like I think when you drive the car, you're in charge of everything in the car. Like where you park, what you listen to. And so I'm not saying that it's right, okay? I just want you guys to know. But when you're driving into the mall and you're looking for a parking spot or the grocery store and some very helpful person is next to you and they're pointing out all the parking spots that you're missing, you know, when that happens, you could take your hands off the wheel and go, do you want to drive? You could do that. Or you could say, you know, when we're looking for a parking spot and you point to every parking spot we're driving by, I feel disrespected. Honestly, I don't know if I could actually do that or not. But it makes for a really good sermon point. So another thing, it's like, I also feel if you're driving, you're in charge of the radio, you know? Yes, that's my area. You know, your area's here. Like, you can get stuff out of the glove box. You can put your window up and down, unless I turn you off. And, you know, you can give me my hamburger or my fries when it's all organized and we're ready to eat. But you can't reach over and like change my radio or like pick up and, you know, like turn my Pandora to country music. You can't do that to me. I'm not talking about Cindy, by the way. You guys are all drawing. See, you're assuming things. Sometimes in church, let's just look at each other in the eye here, okay? Sometimes we can say, you know, based on a decision that got made, you know, you don't care about Ministry X, the thing that is really important to us. And that's just loaded with assumptions. If we use XYZ, though, we could say, you know, when we're determining a budget and you don't fund Y, I feel like what I do isn't important. That's a much better conversation. So stop punching with your words. Fourthly, I know we're running short on time here. Drop your guard and let a few punches land. Drop your guard and let a few punches land. Because in our brains are wired to like figure the program out and like create our arguments. You know, we just route it. It's like, I can deal with that, I can deal with that. And it's like we're just thinking of all of our comebacks. I love what Jude 16 says. It's like a one chapter book in your New Testament. And it says, it describes some people. These are grumblers and fault finders. I think sometimes I'm a grumbler fault finder. It's easy to blame. Blame takes many forms. It could say, you know, well, this is this thing that we have, it's all your fault. We could say, you know, it's partially my fault, but you did all this other stuff. Or we could say, you know, I can see I have fault in this, but you know, you didn't dot an I here. There's a technicality I have you on, and that disqualifies anything you just brought up. Those are all forms of blame. I think that this is one of the places where being a Christian is very countercultural, and it goes back to our understanding of the gospel. You see, in America, we say you're presumed innocent until proven guilty, right? That's a great plan for justice. But it doesn't always work in a relationship like that. In fact, the Christian ethic in conflict is this, that remember, entering Christianity begins with the acknowledgement that we're sinners, that we're broken, that we're not perfect, that we have shortcomings, we make poor choices. That's how we start. That opens us up to the good news of Jesus Christ. And then once we do that, once we start by acknowledging our own sin and receive the unconditional love of God back through what Jesus did on the cross, then God starts to work on us from the inside and he changes who we are. He starts to restructure our character and make us, you know, over time, more like his son, Jesus. So that reconstruction for us is a process that happens many times through conflict with others. But if we get off track in the work that God is doing in us, then we kind of forget about that we're sinners and that we acknowledge that in receiving faith. We forget about that part and we start to reconstruct ourselves in a way which says that we can't be wrong. And it takes away the vulnerability that should be in a relationship. And yet as a Christian, we start with vulnerability. We start with opening up our hearts to God and say, you know, I'm not perfect. You know what? That posture needs to continue in our relationships. And God uses that to shape us more into the likeness of Jesus. In Paul's letter to the Corinthians, his first letter in chapter 6, he talks about this. There's a conflict in the church. They're suing one another. It's that bad. And Paul acknowledges the standard. He says that the wicked will not inherit the kingdom of God. He's not in any way saying, you know, what happened does not matter. He's holding a very high bar. And then he continues to like list some of those things. And I'm sure in that congregation, they were going, yeah, that's them. That's exactly who they are. That's why I'm mad at them. That's why I'm suing them. And then he flips it around at the end of that part. And he says, you know, all those things, such were some of you. That's who you were, except for the saving grace of Jesus Christ. And so if our relationship with God in any way reflects our relationship with people, I think that we're not risking anything by being vulnerable. You know, before we get there, I want to talk about like how to take on more of the blame and be able to talk about it. And here, this is in your notes. Draw a pie chart of your blame, of the blame together when you're in a conflict, and then make your slice as big as possible. Reflecting upon the fact that you entered the Christian faith acknowledging that you're broken. Draw that chart. Actually draw it down and say, you know, this is what I think is part of my blame here. And then grow that as big as you can in your conversation. You know, Jesus modeled this in John 13:14. He said, now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, so also you should wash one another's feet. And you know, in that moment, Jesus as the Son of God humbled himself. And you know what? When he did that, he didn't give up anything. He didn't give up a thing. Lastly, if you want to fight fair, determine how many rounds you go. Determine how many rounds you're going to go, because it can go on and on. I love this verse from the Apostle Paul in Ephesians 4:26. In your anger, do not sin. Don't let the sun go down while you're still angry, and do not give the devil a foothold. You know, some of you have heard that said that you should never go to bed mad as a couple. And so you try to work it out, but you know, honestly, sometimes if you keep after it and you're just tired, you know, you just go to bed madder. So sometimes you have to like cut it off, right? But that verse, what Paul is saying is like, it's not about not going to bed mad. What he's saying is don't let it go on and on and on and on. Because if you do, you give the devil a foothold. He doesn't say if you have these bad conflicts and they go on, you'll be possessed by Satan. Although you might be. He's saying you're giving the devil a foothold. And you know, the foothold is like a point of purchase. It's a place to work off of. And if we let conflict just kind of boil and go on, it's like, that's a place where all kinds of destructive things can start right from that place. So if you're stuck in your conflict, you know, get some help. Get a counselor, read a book, get a lifeline, reach out to a friend. You know, agree to stop and we're going to sleep, we're going to get rest, we might sleep separate. You know, I might not talk to you for 3 days, but like we're gonna come back to this. We're not just gonna let it go on and on. And in doing so, you don't give Satan a place in your life to continue to separate. Because if you don't resolve it, the gap just gets wider, the wall gets taller, the bridges get burned, your distance is further and further apart, and all kinds of bad things happen. If we want to have meaningful, lasting, and fulfilling relationships, we have to learn how to do conflict well. And I hate it. I know you hate it. We all hate it. But if we follow these guidelines and remember how we entered the Christian faith, I think that conflict can add to our relationships, make them stronger, and make us more like Jesus Christ. Let's pray.